All right, I think we're going to start because, you know, at this time of day, I found that a lot of the villagers are still hard at work, and they don't get to play with me. So I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, I like the 6:15 time we had last night, too.
Yeah, we'll have it again tomorrow night, so that'll be a good time. But today, we are going to do the theme, which is trust, lost and found, okay? Now, trust, of course, is such a valuable thing that you never want to lose it. Has anyone here ever lost trust? Excellent stories to be told.
I have, but I was just thinking, Eric Erickson's very first stage is trust and mistrust. So if you don't get that stage, there's no more development.
Exactly right. Now today we're going to do a warm-up. Because there's only a few of us, we can do it very briefly. I wouldn't have maybe chosen to do this if there were more of us. But this one, I think we'll do it over here. And I'm gonna pull the chairs over, because we need a circle. We're gonna make a circle. And we're going to introduce ourselves, first of all. And then we're going to play a trust game. Have any of you familiar with trust games?
Yes. You mean why you fall back?
No, you don't.
Oh. Not that one.
That's not the guy. That is a trust game.
This is a game, and Claire, I'm glad to see you're here because this is an exercise that increases give and take. That's one of the things that a larger sense of trust will give you. Let's is more give and take. Why is that important for a storyteller? Well, because you are live telling a story to someone else who's live. And as you tell, what you're telling is affecting that listener. And they're giving you something. And if you deny it and say, no, you're not giving me anything because I've already decided what I'm going to say and this is the way it's going to be, then you are going to lose out on the most powerful part of your story, which is the connection that it is making with your listener and how it can inform you about the way you are telling your story. Now we have some writers here. How many writers do we have here? No way, girl, not me. Okay, great. I'm so glad there's one old out for the oral tradition. But when you are developing a written piece, I highly recommend. Come on in! Yay! We get to hear his story today. Come on. Yeah, good. Yeah, he got off. He doesn't have to work any longer. Yippee! Well, I'm just talking about give and take. And how when we're telling stories, it's helpful to be able to take what the listener is giving you in the way they're listening, without letting it scare you, throw you, or make you think, oh, I guess, okay, now I'm leaving. And I'll tell you why. It happened to me once. I was invited to tell stories at a farm where they had a big harvest festival every year. And I was on the stage, and I was with some musicians, and I was telling a story. And the audience walked off. And I thought, well, obviously, this is not what they came for. So, I mean, I didn't think I had done a bad job, and if only I was a different state. No, that didn't, thankfully, didn't occur to me. But I did think this is not the place for it. They just want music, and they heard me telling a story, and they said, oh, well, believe. I mean, there were a number of people there, maybe about, not 100, but certainly around 50, and more coming in all the time, driving in. So I couldn't figure out why they weren't coming over to hear the story, and I finally figured it out. So I closed down immediately. I just closed down. They walked off that soon. And then, after the music part, we went down to the farmhouse of the host. He said, why didn't you tell more stories? I said, well, nobody wanted to hear any. You know, they all walked off. No, they wanted to hear. And a bunch of people came around. Yeah, we were listening. It's mic'd. You can hear it from anywhere.
Oh.
Of course, I didn't know that.
Oh.
I did not know that it was mic'd, that they had loudspeakers planted all over the area so that people could stroll around and listen to the program without having to be there. Isn't that novel? But, I mean, now that's an example of my not being able to take what they gave me because I misinterpreted it. And that does happen sometimes. But that said, the give and take is a way you build trust as well. And trust is one of the most precious things the world has ever, ever found. And we actually, on our walk yesterday, began to build trust with a golden mantled
ground squirrel
who was right over in front of Lodge 1 and had his little, in fact, he even showed us where his home was. He went into it once and then came back out again. And he posed beautifully for us while we sat, drawing for him very big trust.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
I was very
big
impressed.
Big monster standing all around him.
And it's such a beautiful animal. All right, now, hello, glad
Hi.
To see you.
Yeah,
we would introduce ourselves.
Oh,
I'm so
Creekside.
Did I say Creekside?
Yeah,
I said,
you said Creekside.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, because
that's what was on the thing, but I was thinking Fireside.
Maybe I heard you wrong.
Oh, it's probably me. All right, now, we're going to introduce ourselves in a very oriental way. We're going to bow, and how do you do? My name is Marin, and you bow, and say, how do you do, Marin?
How do you do, Lauren?
Marin,
I've got
okay, that's why we do it more than once. Or I'm going to do this to everybody in the circle, and then you'll do it to everybody in the circle.
Okay.
How do you do? My name is Marin.
How do you do?
Marin.
Marin.
Very good. How do you do? My name is Marin.
How do you do? My name is Marin.
Wow, perfect. He mirrored me. Okay, very good. How do you do? My name is Marin.
How do you do?
My name is Marin.
Oh, beautiful. How do you do? My name is Marin.
How do you do, Marin?
Oh, how do you do? My name is Marin.
How do you do, Marin?
How do you do? My name is Marin.
How do you do? My name is Marin.
Oh, very good. All right, we're going to land Heather.
Okay. How do you do? My name is Heather.
How do you do, Heather?
How do you do? My name is Heather.
How do you do, Heather?
How do you do? My name is Heather.
How do you do, Heather?
How do you do? My name is Heather.
How do you do, Heather?
How do you do? My name is Heather.
How do you do? My name is Heather.
How do you do? My name is Heather.
How do you do, Heather?
How do you do? My name is Heather.
How do you do, Heather?
Now, do you notice there's two different things happening here? In certain cases, people are playing themselves and saying, how do you do, to that person. In other cases, people are playing the introducer and mirroring it. Both of them are acceptable. And both of them have different things to teach us. All right.
How do you do? My name is Jereen.
How do you do, Jereen?
How do you do? My name is Jereen.
How do you do? My name is Jereen.
How do you do? My name is Jereen.
How do you do, Jereen?
How do you do? My name is Jereen.
How do you do, Jereen?
How do you do? My name is Jereen.
How do you do, Jereen?
How do you do? My name is Jereen.
How do you do? My name is Jereen.
How do you do? My name is Jereen.
How do you do, Jereen? Excellent. Now, keep going.
Oh, how do you do? My name is Kathleen.
How do you do, Kathleen?
How do you do? My name is Kathleen.
How do you do, Kathleen?
How do you do? My name is Kathleen.
How do you do, Kathleen?
How do you do? My name is Kathleen.
How do you do, Kathleen?
How do you do? My name is Kathleen.
How do you do, Kathleen?
How do you do? My name is Kathleen.
How do you do, Kathleen?
And how do you do? My name is Kathleen.
And how do you do? My name is Kathleen.
Now, Clary, you can change it. Then change the motion. You can do a different kind of greeting. Can I say something? Yes.
Hi, my name is Clary.
She's from Texas.
How do you do, Clary?
Keep going.
Hi, my name is Clary.
Well, hi, my name is Vi.
Good, keep going.
Hi, my name is Clary.
Well, how do you do, Clary?
Hi, my name is Clary.
Hi, my name is Clary.
Hi, my name is Clary.
Hi, Clary.
Hi, my name is Clary.
Oh, hi, Clary.
Hi, my name is Clary.
Hi, Clary. All right, you get to change it too if you want to, Dennis.
Okay. Hi, my name is Dennis. High five.
Hi.
Hi, my name is Dennis.
How do you do, Dennis?
Hi, my name is Dennis. Hi, my name is Dennis. Hi, my name is Dennis.
Well, hi, Dennis.
Hi, my name is Dennis.
Hi, Dennis.
Hi, my name is Dennis.
Hi, my name is Mike.
How do you do?
Hi, my name is Vi.
Hi, Vi.
Hi, my name is Vi.
I'm Vi.
Hi, my name is Vi.
Hi, Vi.
Hi, my name is Vi.
Hi, Vi.
Hi, my name is Vi.
Vi.
Hi, my name is Vi.
Hi, Vi.
Good afternoon. My name is Doug.
Good afternoon, Doug.
Good afternoon, my name is Doug.
Good afternoon, Doug.
Good afternoon, my name is Doug.
Good afternoon, Doug.
Good afternoon, my name is Doug.
Hi, Doug.
Good afternoon, my name is Doug.
Good afternoon, Doug.
Good afternoon, my name is Doug.
Good afternoon, Doug.
Good afternoon, my name is Doug.
Nice to meet you, Doug.
Thank you.
All right, now, we're not going to do the trust, the next part, the way everybody did beautifully.
Well, could I quickly ask a question?
What?
I notice there's a big difference in the Asian way of doing it. When you bow, there's no eye contact because you're bowing.
Yeah, that's right.
And you know, in all of these more Western ways, you know, we make eye contact and it's sort of expected of you, and you wonder about somebody if they don't make eye contact. And
yeah, that's right.
That's so a cultural thing.
Heather looked at us when she bowed.
I think in India, that you look at the person. In Japan,
you do not.
Uh-huh. In Japan.
Oh, is that right?
It depends. I don't know about China. I don't know which way.
Shisha.
Okay, but this little game is to demonstrate how your listeners will support you, and why you don't have to be worried about making sure everything goes just right, because it's actually going to happen because of the listeners, not because of you. And when you give your trust to the listeners to get your story, and that's all you need to do. If you've already, you know, if you know what you're going to say. Of course, you can't stand up there and not have a story to tell. But, I mean, who doesn't? Most people are over-prepared, you know? Because most people, actually Americans, are supposed to be more afraid of speaking in public than they are of dying. Is that right? Does that ring true? I mean, yeah, that's what Toastmasters trained you to do. All right, since I'm introducing this little exercise, I'm going to go first because I know. Would you mind closing the gap for me there? All right, and this is why I don't want any holes, is because I'm going to be turning myself around. Basha, I'm trusting you to take care of me. I'm the storyteller, and I'm going to start moving toward one of you, and when I reach you, please turn me around and send me back across the circle. All right, nice job. You guys did it really well. Who wants to go next? We don't all have to do this, but it's good to witness it, and it's a really good experience. It's kind of like rappelling or something, I would guess. You just go down for support.
Oh, she's ready.
Okay, I'll just turn you once. You are doing really well. That was excellent.
Yeah.
You know,
I had a little problem with balance, but I didn't feel.
Let's give her a little feedback here. Did you see a change in her process as she's walking? How are our observation skills? I thought you were great from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
Now I, on the other hand, and then I relaxed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very good. Okay, anyone else want to try? No?
I'll do it. Wait, what do I do?
I'll turn you around. Mm-hmm. Just keep your eyes shut.
Hard to go from the dark
to the
light.
Now you can open your eyes.
Great.
So how did that feel, Heather?
Well, every time I was going from dark to light, I felt like I was, or from light to dark.
Because there's more light
something.
Over there.
And so then something wasn't there yet. And then, yeah, it's just my eyes. Did you have that experience too, with your eyes closed? Light to dark?
Well, see, she's very visual. She's an artist. Anyone else want to try it? No? Okay. Great. No, you can turn yourself. But you have to keep your eyes shut. That was excellent. Look at where you went.
Wow.
Isn't that good? All right. Well, let's now know for a second. It's time for us to get going on our stories. And I toyed with the idea of having a liar's contest, but we don't have quite enough people for that. So instead, I'm going to ask anybody here if you've ever thought of telling a story with an object. Of course. In fact, Heather has an object. She's a very aesthetically beautiful story with some interesting aspects to it. This is a story I got from a book in the shop that Paul gave me called Supper of the Lamb. And it's a cookbook. It's written by an Episcopalian priest. And in that book, he describes the story of the onion. Because he says, so often we, in our normal everyday lives, are either making an idolatry of things or a slave of things. And by idolatry, he means that we concentrate too much on something, let's say TV. That's one of our current idols, I guess you might say. But the humble things, like an onion, we could say we enslave them. We don't care. We're indifferent about them. We chop them up as if, you know, we don't even notice, except maybe complain a little about the tears they cause. And so he suggested that we take time to listen to the story that an onion tells. An onion tells. And I think, hopefully you can hear this from where you are.
Moving closer. Do you want us together, closer to you?
You can, yeah. If you want to. This is really an intimate kind of an experience. Now you see what does an onion have around the outside of it?
Yeah,
it's a layer. Yeah, it's very good. Let's pass a little bit of it around here. Is there anyone here who's allergic to onions?
No, but I will definitely cry.
Well, you know, storytellers are flattered when people cry.
Their onions here are sweet.
Can you hear it? Hear the paper? Mm-hmm. We'll start it from this side too. Smell it. That's good. I'll pick it up. All right. Now I'm going to do something with this one. I'm going to squeeze this one. Love it, love it, love it. Oh, I love you so much. Look at what I've got. The heart of the onion is actually in the shape of, what do you think? I won't make you touch these because then you'll stink like me.
A flame?
A flame, yes. And yeah. It's a flame. And yet, as Catherine's saying, she's going to start crying. And you know what? This is one of the wateriest vegetables I know. I mean, it is really wet. And now, let's see. How do we, if we were not to just cut it up, if we were to take it apart, carefully. It's kind of waxy, actually. And
silk wrapping.
Yes. Now, when I did this in the church once, somebody said, well, the only thing better than an onion for traveling is an orange. Mm-hmm. It can go around the world, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's true. Oranges are another good one to describe. You can hear the sound.
By going around the world, you mean that they don't perish when they go around the world? They last?
Yeah. Now there's one layer after another here. Just as in a relationship with someone else, with a person, there's layer after layer. layer after layer. You think you know that person. And then, lo and behold, yet a new story unfolds. You think you know that hike, and lo and behold, a new view comes up. Or something's there that you didn't recognize before. And such it is with these layers, one after another.
You get thicker.
I'm just going to lay this out like this now, so that we can appreciate it, look at it, and think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot involved with an onion, just as there's a lot involved with a stone. There's a lot involved with almost anything. And that is good. We have a lot of time, and never enough time. Isn't that funny how that works? So there we are. There's our onion story. One other thing we might add. It would be very hard to open up this onion without a knife. And sometimes, it's necessary to use a knife. Not because you want to hurt, but because you want to know. Right? And that, too, has something to do with the story of trust. That said, it's time for us to tell a few stories. Now, how would you like to proceed? Do you want to practice with each other? 2, 4, 6, 8. We got 8 of us here, and we can practice if you want to for 10 minutes, and then we'll stop and tell. Okay? 5-minute story. 5-minute story is too long. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 times 3 is 21. Okay? We don't have time to practice. We're just going to tell. Okay? Let's just go for it. And we can give each other help along the way, all right? And besides, I know somebody's already been through her story once. When you think about trusting and lost and found, think about this. Have you ever been surprised by someone? Have you? That might be a story. I've got a whole list of them here. Have you ever gotten lost? Actually, yes. Have you ever found some treasure that you thought would never come to you? Or have you found something that you've been living with and suddenly realized it had a lot of value? Or someone, or some place. Okay, there's some ideas. Now, because I've had an opportunity to talk about this a little bit with Heather, I'm going to let Heather start.
Okay. For lost and found, that's my story.
Yeah.
Is into that. I'm a wildlife biologist, and things usually happen to me of intriguing nature with wildlife. I don't know why that kind of happens, but there can be 100 people at a wedding that I was at, and why it happened to me, I don't know. But I had this beautiful wedding dance dress I was wearing, and we were down at Santa Barbara's 2 weeks ago, and it was getting chilly, and so I pulled out my scarf, nice pretty scarf to wrap up in, and because the evening was getting chilly, and then I was dancing some more, so I took off my scarf and set it down, and then off we go to gather our stuff up and go home for the night. And on the way home, it's like, where did my scarf go? And I didn't find it in the vehicle, it wasn't in my purse or anywhere. My scarf was missing. Next morning, I called all the wedding people. No one had seen my scarf. I called the park. They hadn't seen my scarf. So my husband and I go up to find out if the scarf has reappeared somewhere. And we're looking. It seems like I'm always losing something. But we're looking, and my husband goes, "What's that?" Down in the rocks, there was the scarf. This scarf right here was drug into a rodent burrow. And all that was left was the fringe. And that was the scarf I was wearing at this wedding. And so I was like pulling it out, and it wouldn't come out. And so I clipped it off. And this is what remains of my scarf. So I love this scarf. It's been all around the world many times with me on trips. And so this is my scarf. And of all things, it's the wildlife biologist was had her scarf stolen by a pack rat in San Harbor and drug into a burrow. So the park people love that story. And I love my scarf and I keep wearing it. So
and now you have another name.
Oh yes, so my brother-in-law is calling me Pack Rat now. Pack Rat 1, Pack Rat 2. This is Pack Rat 2, I'm Pack Rat 1. So I was telling Martin about that. He's admiring my scarf. I was like, oh, there's a story there.
All right, let's just for a minute give her some feedback about it. What did you find especially interesting about the story? Any moments that just stood out to you about it?
She enjoyed telling it so much.
Because she likes it.
You can hardly wait for the final point.
And what about where she found, how she finally got it back? And the character who was responsible.
Because you asked the question, I was saying classic novel, The Rise of Action.
Good point.
I'm surprised you cut it off.
Oh, instead of leaving it all there?
Well, no, instead of like digging and getting it all.
Oh, I consider that.
That you shared it with.
It's been to Paris, it's been to Scotland, it's been also.
Well, and I have a scarf like that, so it was easy to identify.
Oh, how important that one.
I have a
gift.
Yeah.
It was a gift from a close friend.
The one, and I was glad when you took it off and actually let us see it.
Put it in the rock.
Yeah.
I thought that was wonderful. And I also was glad that you had another character in there.
Oh.
Yeah.
The pack rat.
You had
my husband.
And your husband.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I was glad. And your brother-in-law.
Oh, yeah.
You have four characters in there. All right. Now, what would you like to do next with the story? Would you like to continue telling it? Is there any way you'd like to change it?
To start lying and creating. Well, actually, yeah, what was going on the other side? You know, I kept thinking about that, and I have done some research since. It's like, who actually is moves around at nighttime in Santa Barbara? Is it really a pack rat? Is it, which is a bushy-tailed wood rat? And they do have those there. Was it a squirrel? No, they're not nocturnal. So I was trying to figure all that out. Now I'm trying to figure out, what is their burrow like? But it was concrete, cemented, and just this one little spot down there. So I couldn't dig it out because I couldn't. The hole was about 2 inches circle.
Wow.
And it just pulled my whole scarf in there except for the fringe.
Mm-hmm.
So
could you use this for a story with the kids in the schools that you go?
Yeah. Well, my brother, my pack rat brother-in-law, he wants me to do a story.
Yeah.
And then a radio friend of mine, she wants me to write the story so she can read it on her monologue.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Mm-hmm. Well, you've got a lot going on there.
Yeah, because it's just so funny that it's me.
Absolutely.
As a wildlife biologist.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And you can use that more, you know, mm-hmm. by like what you were saying, your research, you can build the story. You see, you want to, when you're telling the story, you set it up. So we want to know. It's been around the world. You tell us how much it means to you, and it's gone.
Yeah.
And then what you had to do to get it back, and all the steps you had to go through. Remember the folk tales. Go back to those, because they are the old stories, and they know how to tell a story and make it work really well. And they use repetition. You try one thing, it doesn't work. You try another, it doesn't work. In this case, you try to find the culprit. Uh-huh. Is it a ground squirrel? Is it a squirrel? Is it a fox? Is it a human?
Uh-huh.
Is it, well, they are known to take things. And so on. Actually, when you said pack rat, at first I thought, oh, maybe there was a klepto at the wedding.
Oh.
Picked it up. That's what I thought first.
At the wedding, sure.
But anyway, that builds your story, you see. And then you also get to share your character of you're a serious naturalist. Mm-hmm. And you know how to research and how to do this stuff. And plus you're teaching the kids or whoever is reading about it.
Yeah.
So it's all put together that way.
It'd be fun to illustrate it too.
Yes. Yes. Both
sides of it.
Yes.
And that's where the lie comes in, though, is, you know, I am imagining who's on that other side. Where are they? Are they gone because it's daylight and I'm doing that? Are they in there watching the monster trying to pull it out? So all of that, I have to be a little true to force. But yeah, then the imagination comes through in that. Children.
Well, also your pride. You can have some fun with your pride too.
Yeah,
that's the deal. You know, yeah. I'm a respected naturalist, and look at
that. I got taken down.
Well, you don't have to say that, because like I suggested before, you can be in denial. It's always good to let your audience be smarter than you are, and they say, "Oh, this poor thing." She really thinks she's got her game together.
That was why everyone's laughing.
Okay, yeah. Good. All right. Well, Dennis, we want to hear from you next, please. Because we didn't get a chance to hear you last week.
Yeah.
So you can tell Claire's story if you want to. Or you can tell yours. Pull your chair around so that you can make that contact with all of us. And you can stand up, you guys. You don't have to sit and tell. You can stand up, you can move around, you can create your own space. Okay?
Well, I'm going to tell you a very short story about lost and found, too. And I just barely recall it, because I'm sure anybody that had youngsters at some time or another lost in a store or in a shopping mall or someplace.
Yeah.
The hecticness of trying to find them back. Well, my story is... families usually got together on Sunday afternoon, and the kids usually all went outside to play, and of course I don't know how old I was, maybe 3 or 4 or something like that, but I got lost in the cornfield, and they couldn't find me for the longest time, and of course everybody was getting very, very more and more excited. You know, where was I? They figured, well, it must be in the cornfield. So they started scouring the cornfield, and I recall this went on for some time, and I think it was almost starting to get dark. You know, and they found me, and I was found by one of my uncles that happened to be at the place, and that's kind of my story of being lost.
Whoa. That's a good story, and it's right out of your life on the farm.
Yes.
That's great. What part of the story really came to life for you? Anybody? Want to give them a little feedback on that?
We lost our daughter in a store one time, and on our way to church, and it was very hectic, and She followed my wife into the store. She was in the back seat, and I didn't notice that. And rushed on, and even our son didn't notice it. And we got to church, and then there was no daughter. So my wife and son went on in, and I rushed back there to the store, and there she was, standing out on the sidewalk, just barely holding the tears back. She was probably about 5 years old.
Oh, no.
Saying, "Daddy, why did you leave me?"
Well,
that's what I expected Dennis to have, the crying.
But it was a little different.
How old were you, Dennis?
I don't know how old I was either. Of course, these memories get clouded, but
yeah.
I don't think I actually cried in the cornfield, because, you know, some kids, when they're lost, they don't think they're lost. Their parents are lost.
Oh. That's a good point. Oh, I like that. Now you got it. Yeah.
Parents are lost. Kids are lost.
They don't realize
they're not lost. I don't think I realized I was lost either. So many times, kids get lost, you know, and under this type of circumstances, and they'll get lost with a pet, usually a dog. The dog will just go take off, and the kid will follow the dog wherever they want to go, and the dog doesn't have any sense of where they're going. They're just going. And I think there was a dog in this instance too, that the dog went into the cornfield and I followed the dog.
I wanted to know more about how you were feeling. If you were scared, or if you were excited or exhilarated, or if you could hear people looking for you,
that I don't remember whether they are. I imagine they were hollering for me or yelling for me. And, you know, sometimes out of fear, a kid will won't answer, because they figure they're going to get
in trouble.
Right. They're going to get disciplined.
Now, that's another good choice for you to make.
Yeah.
I'm not answering. And now you can introduce some direct dialogue, which is always good, folks. Always use direct dialogue when you can. For example, the voice of your uncle or whoever was looking for you.
Yeah.
Danny, or whatever he called you. Dennis! And the louder he got, the quieter you got. You weren't about to get found.
Right?
And that's great. That is the unexpected. See, and it contradicts our expectations. That's funny. That's one of the principles of comedy, contradiction.
Right.
Well, my question would be, do you actually remember this, or has this story been told over and over?
That was my question.
The family.
No, I actually remember, but I know there are stories that are get told, you know, because I know that there are stories, like I remember one of my cousins was telling, or one of my aunts was telling about when her daughter was baptized, I believe it was baptism, and it was her first daughter, and of course, her first birthday was, I think, baptism, I think. But anyway, she had bought a nice dress, nice little dress for the daughter, and a new pair of booties, you know, and she put them on. And that kid bawled and bawled and bawled all day. and she got to the evening, and she couldn't figure out what she was bawling about, but she had left the socks inside the booties and put them on.
Oh,
so you might imagine her toes were curled up inside the nut purse. So that's kind of a favorite story.
That's a good one too. Well, both your stories indicate they're classic folk tales, even though they're real. They're classic because it's the turnaround. It's the kid who knows more, or the little one, or the weak, the vulnerable, who actually is stronger than the know-it-alls, the grown-ups. See? And that's a very popular kind of a theme. to take, and it is really fun to hear stories like that. Because who doesn't feel like they're not vulnerable? I mean, when we get right down to it.
A story like this one, where you have your own memory, but you also have the memories of the story being told by others,
right,
over the,
yeah,
years.
This is part of this story too, because I knew I had been lost. I remember that much of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember the uncles and everybody talking about this later on.
Right.
That, you know, they, among themselves. But remember when we found you in the cornfield?
Yeah.
Well, you know, you just you had just a faint memory of that.
Yeah.
How long did it take?
Sort of, but you told
me.
Well,
I think it took a couple hours, because I think it was, if I recall right, it was, you know, it was getting, it was,
yeah,
late in the afternoon, and it was
starting
to get dark.
And did you finally give up the reins of control there and let them find you, or did they just?
I think they just stumbled on me.
Well,
you know,
they start
sometimes the kid, you know, you get lost in there, and they'll just sit down and sit there and not do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is the case where they just stumbled on me. You know, sometimes I might have, you know, like a kid might be just playing in the dirt, and he's just as satisfied as he doesn't realize he's lost. You know?
Those cornfields are so tall.
Yeah, and that's another
that
thing you wanted to describe that.
Yeah.
And do you think that they systematically started each one taking a row,
yeah,
to walk down?
Yeah, that's what they did.
That's a good thing to add. So, Mark, can you say, you know, use a device like I've been told they looked for me all afternoon.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure. You can say,
I've been
you
told,
use
or,
that.
Or
okay.
Then Uncle
right.
Such and such and such and such started down the ropes one at a time.
Yep.
Well, what is charming and funny is that this is his first person story of how he knows it all.
Yeah.
Although he was so young, he doesn't even remember how old he was.
I don't remember right exactly how old I was.
Yeah, right.
Oh,
and
good,
and
yeah.
That's why you could say that. You could say, this was a back and once upon a time when I knew it all. I don't even remember how old I was.
with the memory thing recently in a radio interview, I heard someone say, when your parent dies, you not only lose your parent, you lose all of their memories of you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is such a good one.
Yeah.
Such
and
a good
you
one.
Can't go back now and ask those people.
No,
that's
right.
I thought that was really
that's powerful.
Yeah,
that's important. Mm-hmm. Who wants to go next? All right.
I'll just tell something that happened this afternoon after lunch. I'd be very brief, but sort of a lost and refound and lost and refound.
Speak up a little bit more, though, because we want to hear you.
My wife and I went hiking, and I had my fishing rod along and was doing some fishing on Railroad Creek, the
mm-hmm.
one that goes right down
mm-hmm.
here by the road,
yeah.
And walked down here on the Monkey Bear Falls Trail until you come to the Goat Trail, and then you cross over Savannah's Bridge, which is a footbridge that goes across the creek. And the creek is quite big now because of all the rain we have. And I was just going to wade wet with some sandals I have and have these Dacron-type trousers so they dry out quickly. And my wife, who's always very practical and looking after me, and sometimes I need it, said, you know, I'm not going to leave you here. I'm going to sit here and knit while you're fishing so I can see you so you won't do anything foolish. Because I have, you know, gotten taken downstream a bit of time to wading. And I'd forgotten my trekking pole, so I didn't have that. And I also didn't come very well prepared with fishing gear, so I dutifully went downstream where she could see me, and very careful to get a stick that I could help myself cross in a very safe place when I needed to cross the stream. And I was catching a few fish just on a spinner because I had my spinning rod. I should have had my fly rod, it would have been better for the stream, but I was thinking about fishing in the lakes, which we'll do later. And I had on a rooster tail spinner with a treble hook, and I caught two or three fish out of this area by a log dam. And then I caught a fish, and it had been hooked by all three hooks. And I killed the fish, getting the hook out, and I was just catching and releasing. And I felt so guilty. It was a beautiful little cutthroat trout. And I thought, why in the heck am I using this hook? I do have some flies in there which I could use behind a bobber. You know, it's a way you can fish with flies if you just have a spinning rod. And so I switched to that too late, but then I started actually catching more fish with the flies, and they're very easy to release because they had the barbs all bent back. So I guess I sort of lost and refound my sense of ethical fishing.
Oh. Now that is an interesting point.
Next punchline.
Very good. Well, we all like the punchline, obviously. What else do we like?
I like his word dutiful in there.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he had the wife and another character. It wasn't just himself.
That was good. And
he was looking after him.
Yes, that was good. And now, if you could just take her voice and speak as Lily.
Uh-huh.
And just use that. And you might add that, you know, she's...
Well, she's always more practical and responsible.
Well, you already added that.
No, she
I
said,
could picture
Doug, you know, she says, I'm going to stay here and knit, and I'm going to watch you.
Yes, that's right. That's
right. I
pictured
her when you made that mistake catching that one trout that died, and and I wondered if we did, but I could just picture her kind of going, you know, I see what you're doing up there, I'm knitting, and I.
Well, you could also have some fun with the fact that she was born in Norway.
Yeah.
And you could use that as a refrain, you know, and of course, she won't tolerate any unnecessary risks. Born in Norway, you know, and then go on, you know, and then you could also get to the point where, you know, the trout, and like she says, and I felt guilty, especially when I looked at Lily shaking her head, born in Norway, you know.
Well, actually, she was too far away. She could see me, but she couldn't even see the trout.
Oh.
And I think the Norwegians, the last thing they would feel guilty about
is
killing.
That's for sure. Good point.
Cod and crab.
Yeah.
And all these other pieces of fish routinely. I mean,
after all, how did they survive if
they
didn't eat
them? They wouldn't have survived all these millennia
yeah.
without being fishermen for food.
I like the name of that triple.
Yeah,
hairy spinner or whatever it
yeah,
was.
Yeah, I did
called.
Too.
Oh, the rooster tail.
The rooster tail.
Yeah, that was a really good detail.
Yeah, it was. It was. And you know what I'd like to see you do when you're telling it? I'd like to see you actually, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And the rooster tail, one of my favorites. You know, I like that.
I really thought he was going to lose a fish and catch it again when he said he lost something. And then when that fish was dead, I thought, no, there's got to be something else. I really
he lost his ethical sense.
The punchline. I thought
that was really good. And
to
especially if you start.
I did too.
I want to know if I'm going to get a taste of it tomorrow morning.
Oh, no. I released all the fish I caught. I probably caught a dozen. No.
Even the dead one?
No, I did that when I released him because there are scavengers, crawdads, and everything in the stream that will benefit from these
natural predators.
So, but I'm, you know, primarily a fly fisherman and release all the fish. But it was sort of sad that I didn't think about fishing this different way from the beginning, where I wouldn't have injured that one.
But then we wouldn't have had
we all
that's
were.
True.
One thing really though, I want to urge you to do is remember to say, well, this is about something I lost and found.
Uh-huh.
So when you get to the punchline, it's connected.
Right.
And it, yeah. But it's
and
really great. Good story. Who's next?
Dinner.
Well, I haven't heard it yet, so let's go. They haven't rung the bell. Who's next? Anybody who needs to leave can leave, too. OK. Don't everybody jump up, Edwards. Come on, Catherine.
My name is Kathleen.
Kathleen. Oh,
that's
sorry.
A story.
Okay.
That's a story.
That's a good one.
I didn't know what story to tell, but that's a good one.
Okay.
When I was in grade school, I made a conscious decision that I was going to be called Kathy, because I was always called Kathleen, and I thought it was much too formal. And it wasn't very cool. So I wanted to be cool, so I was Kathy. There were a lot of Kathys. Well, by the time I got to high school, I realized that was probably a mistake, because when you walk down the hall in high school, the thing you're judged on, at least I thought you were judged on, was how many people said hello to you
mm-hmm.
in the halls
mm-hmm.
between classes.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you were walking down the hall, that was, you were really popular.
Oh, yeah. So.
Well, in our high school, there must have been, I don't know how many hundred Kathys. And I went to a really large, thousands of people. My graduating class was 666. And when I walked down the hall in high school, it was, hi, Kathy. Well, you didn't know if they were talking to you or not.
Mm-hmm.
So when I went to college, something I should add also in high school was whenever anyone would call on the phone, which was, of course, very important in those days. We didn't have cell phones or texting or computers or anything. When anyone would call on the phone, which you were very lucky if you had one in your room, my father would answer and say, I could always tell if it was for me, because he would often say, I'm sorry, no one here by that name lives here. No one by that name lives here.
Oh,
and, it would hang up. And it would frustrate me to no end, because he didn't know who it was and I didn't know who it was, and so people just thought they always got the wrong number when they were trying to reach me.
As Kathy.
As Kathy, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, for Kathy, obviously. So when I got to college, I realized that there were way too many Kathys in the world, and that my parents really were smart in naming me Kathleen, and went back to being called Kathleen, and pleased my parents to no end that I had finally grown up at the age of 17. And so now I go by Kathleen Kedwin. And I even correct people when they call me Kathy.
Excellent. Now that is a really tight little story you've got there.
Who knew?
I mean, it just came right out. And I mean, I can't even think of, I guess the only thing that you might want to think about doing is a little more dialogue, maybe, with your parents. You could have some fun with the teenage Kathy and the adult Kathleen. And, you know.
Yeah, I wondered why you should tell your dad this little decision you'd made, or whether he knew that, but
just
wasn't going to go along
with
it.
Yeah, that's a good question.
So there's a little dynamic there that you could build on.
Mm-hmm. That's
what
right.
What was going on there with your dad?
Yeah.
My question is, do any of your friends from that era who called you Kathy
good
still
question.
Insist on calling you Kathy? Because
yes.
I have friends the same way. And it's hard for me to go to the other.
I now wonder who they're talking about. And that would be good to bring in.
Yes.
Now, I'm wearing the shoes
yes.
that says, there's no one here by that name.
Yeah.
And there isn't anyone here by that name.
Oh, that's really good.
Yes, there are.
Does that identify them from a certain era of your life?
You're right.
Very good.
I can't be like.
You're Kathy like. Well, everybody, I did hear the bell ring, and I know that we're just starting.